For years, Dr. Anthony Fauci was one of the most influential voices in America. His guidance shaped public policy. His recommendations, well, it affected schools, businesses, churches, military readiness, and nearly every American family. But now, years after the COVID-19 pandemic, many of the decisions made during that time continue to face scrutiny. Congress has questioned Dr. Fauci under oath. House investigations, well, they've examined aspects of the federal pandemic response. And former President Joe Biden's pardon of Dr. Fauci has reignited debate over accountability and what a presidential pardon can and cannot do. Many questions we hope to have answered to for one of the most consequential chapters in modern American history. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes, and this is America First. The COVID-19 pandemic changed America. Businesses closed, schools shut down, families missed weddings, graduations, funerals, and holidays. Millions of children lost valuable classroom time. Small businesses disappeared, churches closed their doors. Lives were changed forever. Throughout much of that period, Dr. Anthony Fauci became the public face of America's pandemic response. His advice influenced administrations, governors, health departments, universities, employers, and media organizations. To many Americans, he represented an expert during a crisis. To others, he became the symbol of policies they believe exceeded the available evidence or failed to adequately consider competing viewpoints. Now, years later, House committees have examined aspects of the federal COVID-19 response, including public health guidance, funding decisions, communication, and testimony provided to Congress. Dr. Fauci has defended his actions and has disputed accusations that he intentionally misled out lawmakers. Now, there's this another development. It's added to the debate. Former President Joe Biden's pardon of Dr. Fauci, a presidential pardon, may forgive federal crimes committed before the pardon was issued, but it does not authorize someone to commit future crimes, nor does it protect a witness from prosecution for alleged perjury or false statements made after the pardon. That distinction has become part of today's national conversation. For me, however, this story is also deeply personal. You know, as a journalist, I watched something happen that I had never expected to see in America. Questions became controversial. Debates became dangerous, and reporting outside the prevailing consensus often came with professional consequences. You know, some journalists lost their platforms. Others faced public criticism. Some even were pressured by employers or social media modernization policies after reporting or commenting on issues that later became subjects of broader scientific debate. You know, looking back, I think it's very much worth asking. Did America leave enough room for honest disagreement? Did we properly distinguish between misinformation and legitimate scientific debate? And what lessons should guard us before the next public health emergency? Those are the questions we hope to answer. So joining me now are Jody O'Malley, a health and human service whistleblower, and Duane Moore, Navy vet, former football player, and CEO of the Duane Moore Foundation. Thank you so much for joining me. Duane, while she unmutes her mic, Duane, what do you know about this? And what do you know is actually about? What can people do? How far does President Biden's pardon go when it comes to Dr. Fauci's testimony?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because going back to what you said earlier, even though former President Joe Biden gave Dr. Fauci that pardon, but when we look at what's going to happen in the future and when it relates to prevention for our American people here in our American society, we want to make sure that not only do we have the right people in place to make sure the concern of the American people when crisis and things like this happen in the future, that we're not going to go down the same path. And, you know, for Dr. Fauci to be our chief medical advisor, which holds a position that ensure the American people that we're in great hands, we're in good hands when it relates to medical initiatives, we want to make sure that in the future, we don't go back down this journey. So even though he got the pardon, but to make sure that we're putting the right initiatives and the right processes in place to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And if it does happen again, then we got much greater precautions than what we've seen happen in 2019, 2020.
Jody, do you think Dr. Fauci actually deserves some sort of protection? Did this pardon really mean anything? Or does the fact, should he be held completely accountable for everything he did during that time?
He has to be held accountable. I mean, he was the face of COVID, right? He's the one who guided all of these policies. Everybody, he was the science. Yeah, you know, self-proclaimed, he was the science. If you don't believe what he says, then you don't believe in science. So absolutely, there has to be some accountability.
Dwayne, one of the questions that came up was, he's an 85-year-old man. He's not going to be in charge of anything anymore. Should we just let him go just based on the fact that he's 85 years old?
You know, sometimes when you talk about age, you know, and I know as you get older, levels of expertise comes forward when it relates to wisdom and wisdom principles. But when you get that age, I want to know really how sharp you are in your mind. I mean, he's been doing this for more than 50 years. Individual stated that he has always had true and pure collaboration when it relates to whether it was a congressional hearing or a senatorial hearing. And for him to plead the fifth that many times, I'm just concerned about where we at this point with someone of that age, with that many years of experience and pleading the fifth that many times. It's a dead cat online somewhere. And I don't know. I just, I don't believe in pushing older people out. But at this point, I don't know if I trust an 85-year-old in that position at this point.
Well, and Jody, because he was questioned in front of Congress about a number of issues, including the origins of COVID-19, federal research funding, public health recommendations, and how the government communications happened in this pandemic. Looking at the hearings as a whole, what were the principal areas that you think lawmakers were trying to clarify, and where do you think disagreements remain between investigators and Dr. Fauci's testimony?
I think the entire premise of the hearing was about the COVID hospital protocols and what they did to society. That's something that we will never be able to undo. But what we can, what we do see from it is that COVID exposed an ethical crisis, right? As much as a medical one in the fact that there were these COVID hospital protocols. It was a one size fits all approach, and any dissenting voice was met with misinformation, being deplatformed, or in many circumstances, losing their license. And it made it, you know, expose how people just were so afraid to talk about scientific discourse and have debate. And that is the entire premise of medical freedom. And if we can't have these discussions at the bedside with our patients, to one another at the nurse's station, then what do we have? I mean, you know, ethics, I always come back to ethics, Scotty, because that is what guides every single profession. As you talked in the beginning, journalism, you have a code of ethics. Every profession has a code of ethics, and nobody followed it. For nurses, our primary duty is to the patient, but our primary duty was to policy and every changing protocols.
You know, it's interesting that you bring this up because you talk about nurses and science. Dwayne, I think one of the biggest issues that I had during all of this is even when it came to nurses or those inside the hospital or outside, none of this actually made sense because it wasn't based on science. And once it was proven that science was completely opposite of what was being told, they still kept on the same policies. Science is supposed to evolve as evidence changes. Do you think public health officials did enough during that time to distinguish between settled science and the evolving scientific understanding?
You know, I don't think they did enough. I mean, you know, I get like we was faced with something. We were faced with a pandemic that I don't think we had been faced with, you know, ever before, you know, even though, you know, obviously, you know, we had the flu pandemic that went on years prior to, and there were some other things that has happened in our country. But obviously, the preparation going into this, I would think when it relates to science and medicine, and the protocols behind procedures and policies when it relates to how to represent that particular office, you know, when it relates to how you're going to serve our American citizens, I don't think that that was enough preparation when it relates to how they navigated through the process. And whatever protocols that was in place, we weren't ready. And so I'm just hoping going forward, we make some changes in processes and procedures when it relates to how we assist, you know, our American people.
Dwayne, I'm going to stick with you on this, because how do you think that impacted the public trust with the as they were viewing the rules that were going on, the rules as they continued, when they changed and when they didn't change?
You know, I will tell you, I mean, and kind of going back to the question earlier, having an 85-year-old, and I don't want to put that much emphasis on his age, but when it relates to his experience, when it relates to talking about public trust, when I look at this Senate hearing, and I think, you know, I won't get into Rand Paul and him presiding, you know, that hearing, but when it relates to him pleading the fifth that many times, and based off of Fauci's own response, he has always been in collaboration with the hearings that has been made available for him, and for him not to collaborate, for him not to have answers, it's 6 years later. And I think we owe it to the American people 6 years later to have more peer answers than to plead the fifth that many times. So from a public perspective, I don't trust him. I don't think a lot of people don't trust him.
Well, before we go to break, Jody, I've got to ask you your take on the fifth. Were you surprised that Dr. Fauci took the fifth, or did he have no other option considering all of the mountain of evidence that was growing against some of the decisions that he made?
No, he shouldn't have taken the fifth. I mean, that's just a cowardly way out of it. And, you know, just to answer, you know, about the protocols, we as medical professionals, there's something called evidence-based practice, and that is what informs our practice. So to say that science was ever evolving and they were doing the best they could, that is completely inaccurate. You know, we know from public health policy 101 that you do not lock down the healthy with the sick. We know that you help treat people at first signs of symptoms instead of waiting until their body is ravaged and their immune response is so out of control. I say this all the time. People died in hospitals due to the hospital protocols. I will 100% back that up. My HHS whistleblower lawsuit is still in effect. And, you know, and so many people know, you know, what they did, it was a pandemic of fear, and people lost their ability to critically think. That is what happened. And then it became polarized by politics. Politics has no place at the bedside, Scotty.
Right. No, absolutely. Jody, hold on to that thought. I want you to finish when we come back. Dwayne, hold with us, because when we come back, we're also going to discuss what Congress has actually uncovered and whether America has learned the right lessons from COVID and how we rebuild trust between government, medicine, journalists, and the American people. Stay with us. Welcome back to America First. We're discussing COVID accountability, congressional oversight, and what the pandemic taught us about government transparency and the free exchange of ideas. Joining me back again are Jody O'Malley, a Health and Human Services whistleblower, and Dwayne Moore, Navy veteran, former football player, and CEO of the Dwayne Moore Foundation. Dwayne, I have to also start off by saying thank you so much for your service to our country. We're definitely indebted to amazing heroes like yourself. Jody, I left with you, so I'm going to start with you, because one criticism that we have heard repeatedly is that pandemic policies often left little room for dissenting opinions, even from credentialed scientists like yourself. So looking back, do you believe institutions were too quick to dismiss alternative viewpoints? And how should scientific disagreements be handled during emergency situations in the future?
Well, you know, the code of ethics, again, I always go back to this because it's not for easy days. It's written for moments just like a pandemic, right? Exactly like the pandemic that we went through. And, you know, we have to look at it for every policy, every protocol. You look at the patient in front of you and you decide, how does this benefit or harm my patient? Right. Again, our commitment is not to politics, not to our employers. We don't leave our character and integrity when we clock in. We bring that along with us. And our compass, you know, should not change just because of the headlines. You know, I mean, again, Scotty, ethics and all of that is not what you do when it's safe. It's what you do when it costs you something. And the patient is at the center of the code for nurses and for doctors. And, you know, and like I said, how does this serve the patient?
And that's sort of like other issues that we're dealing with, Duane, because public confidence is at an all-time low. Not only we're talking about the healthcare system, but obviously politicians, journalism, but it declined even more, if that was even possible, during and after the pandemic. So whether it's government agencies, public health organizations, legacy media, or even social media platforms, a trust remains a huge challenge that people are trying to figure out how to gain back. You seem like a practical guy. What practical steps would you suggest could actually help restore that trust?
Well, you know, it always has to start with our leadership, you know, when it relates to who we are selecting and electing, you know, in leadership, whether it be at a local level, state level, or federal, national level. I think we got to do a better job at vetting leadership, making sure that we put in the right people in office that's going to truly represent our American people and constituents of our country, because that is where it has to start at. Because I get some people have their own personal agenda. Some people have their own business mode operandi when it relates to why they want to be elected in a public office. But if you don't have a voice that's going to echo for the people and the constituents within our American society, then you're doing it for the wrong reason. So I think that we got to do a better job in making sure not only we are elected and selecting the right public officials, but we got to have a better vetting process to make sure that people don't have their own personal business agenda on why they want to represent people.
Which that sounds great, and I agree with you 100%, Duane. But Jody, here we are in a midterm election year. All those on the campaign trail completely say the same thing, and yet when they actually get elected, they don't do it. And we continue to re-elect them. So whose fault really is it that we continue to have a trust issue? Is it the congressman or the people that continue to re-elect those same folks and believe them every time?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, COVID exposed a crisis that we had. And there's so many people that now, like myself, before 2020, Scotty, I thought I was doing my civic duty by voting every 4 years. I had no idea that, you know, it starts within your local community and we need to get involved. You know, I'm a faith-based believer. My guiding light is a follower of Jesus, right? And his teachings. And that doesn't mean a separation of church and state, if you will, because we have to be involved and we have to be involved at our local level. The Bible tells us that. And it's like we have to pay attention on what's going on that we can influence in our community. And people need to step up. And we've had a lot of people stepping up. Myself, I never thought I would be called to, you know, speak to you even. This was never anything that I had planned. I never wanted to be a whistleblower and lose my federal job. I mean, it was a cush job. We were doing very well, making 25% hazard duty pay while we were sitting there. People weren't allowed in. Advocates weren't allowed in. I mean, it's just, it's horrific what happened. But I'll say this, people deserve facts. They deserve honesty and they deserve respect so that they can make an informed decision based on what's right for them. This whole do it for grandma nonsense that we heard over and over, or you don't care about, you know, your fellow neighbor if you don't put a mask on, if you're not 6 foot distancing. I mean, it was insanity. And for me, it was a spiritual battle. We're still in it.
Many of those same people were in office when this was happening, when COVID was going on. In fact, I think the majority of them were. They were quiet. They didn't shut their mouth. And so they're sitting there pointing fingers at Fauci. But why weren't you pointing fingers at Fauci when it was happening? And that is, I think, the frustrating part Americans have. It's like, we don't have the power. Our only power comes when we can go into the voting box. You had the power. You didn't do anything. And then you go and do, you know, Monday morning quarterback and say, oh, but you handled it wrong. You handled it wrong, federal government. Let's call it for the accountability that it is. And Jody, we still have so many questions that have not been answered. Some of them only are specific to that situation. But from your perspective as a medical professional, what important questions remain unresolved?
Well, I mean, I think the vaccine injured. Let's talk about them for a second. You have a lot of people that took this experimental injection, and that were they given informed consent? No. Most healthcare providers don't know the PrEP Act, right? They didn't know that these medical countermeasures that the PrEP Act covers, all of them, from the truck driver who drove it to the person who made it to the person who injected it in you, they're all liability and immunity free. So first of all, we have to get rid of the PrEP Act. But we have to have these informed consent conversations, Scotty. We have to.
Well, and that's very important from one perspective. But going forward, Dwayne, are we still susceptible to fall again? I mean, as she pointed out, you have to give the emergency responders, probably don't know much about the PrEP Act. Are we having to give them law degrees on top of a medical degree in order to be able to know what they're doing is right or wrong in the future because they can't trust what their government's telling them?
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, that's why I say we have to do a better job. You know, and I get, like, when you have someone like a Fauci and his team that's have this level of experience based off level of expertise from the years that they've been doing this, and something new comes out. But what processes and steps and procedures are we taking at this point? You know, and you're absolutely right. When I hear this senatorial hearing on the other day, I'm not comfortable. You know, I'm not comfortable now with going anywhere when it relates to my livelihood and entrusting that, whether it be the CDC or whether it be anybody that's handling, you know, healthcare in our country, you know, where's the transparency? Like, you know, we 6 years later and we still can't get answers. We still don't understand, you know, what happened and what direction and precautionary steps that we're going to take going forward. I'm not comfortable, you know, and I think, you know, whether it be from our president all the way down to our governors in each state, this got to be a major concern going forward.
And it does. And compared to the rest of the world, when you're looking at how the rest of the world, both the government and the medical community, Jody, was handling it, did America do so well, or did other countries do it better, or did we do better?
Well, we had the worst outcomes of COVID. We lost the most people. The Native American population that I served, they lost 6 years off of their lifespan. We did it the absolute worst. And I think a reason for that was for the hospital protocols, remdesivir was, you know, nurses talk about it, they call it run death is near. And that's because that was the COVID protocol. Somebody came in, they had COVID, though, or they presumed them positive. Don't forget about that. If that test was negative, the doctor can presume them positive based off of a couple of symptoms. But that gave hospitals a 20% bonus payout under the CARES Act of the total hospital admission. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, and I think I lost my train of thought, but we have so many people who lost their lives. They lost their lives, and we have the families that are suffering. We have the widows out there. You know, Senator Ron Johnson has committed to holding a hospital protocol hearing in D.C. in September, he said. And hopefully that's going to go viral and people will create clips. And what's going to happen, Scotty, people are going to hear this just like they do at the nurse's station when they hear my story, because I'm practicing in the ER still. And when you open up that dialogue and you start talking in truth, right, you know, people's ears perk up. They said, oh, that happened to me. That happened to my friend. That happened to my brother. That happened to my husband. And then people start to relate to that. And then that inspires courage for people to tell their story, because people were so threatened by the loss of their license, or even their family members don't talk to them anymore because of their viewpoints. There's so much that we need to do. And that starts with having character and having the integrity to speak the truth, you know, no matter what.
Well, that's why I have both you and Dwayne on. Jody O'Malley, a health and human service whistleblower. And Dwayne, thank you so much for joining me on this show. Dwayne Moore, Navy vet, former football player, legend, CEO of the Dwayne Moore Foundation. I'm a huge fan, have been following you on social media for years. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me.
Thank you.
You know, history has a way of testing our convictions. The COVID pandemic, well, it tested our healthcare system. It tested our economy, tested our schools, our families, and it tested one of the America's most important principles, the ability to ask questions, well, without fear. Now, healthy democracies, well, it depends on accountability. They depend on oversight. They depend on a press willing to challenge those in power, regardless of who holds office. Now, science advances through evidence, resting debate, and revision. Journalism serves the public by asking difficult questions, even when those questions are unpopular. And as we continue examining one of the most significant events of our lifetime, accountability should never be mistaken for retaliation. And disagreement, well, should never be mistaken for disloyalty. If America is going to be better prepared for the next crisis, we have to be willing to honestly examine the last one. I want to thank our guests for joining us. And thank you for watching. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been America First.